And to be brief, there are a lot of slides. We'll skip over a lot of them. And this is a bit of a presentation from a 50,000 foot, or maybe 50,000 mile view. It's based on a slogan that's haunted me many years, a point of pride in international health. We have no money, so we must think. I have a number of co-authors. They were engaged in the early parts of the study, collecting data and doing concepts, but things veered off before this talk, and they're not really responsible for its faults. It's about basically trying to say something like, look, around the world we see high health levels in many nations and low health levels in other nations. Some of these nations have a lot of resources through which to build public health. Others don't have much. And so it's a bit about making comparisons and keeping score. There's a question as to whether this is worth doing or worth doing well. So it's a bit of an exploration that comes in reaction, at least on my part, that if you look at sustainability measures, efforts to cut down on environmental costs of our activities, there are very few sustainable measures that actually include a reference to health. And those that do often do in a fairly obscure way. Also, we generally assume in the U.S. that by bicycling and eating healthier food, we're going to cut environmental costs, and by doing these things, we'll be healthier. But actually, as we look at the large scale of what the world is like, and as we compare nation by nation resources we have available to us, if we're seriously going to cut our environmental costs, we have to look at health issues. The World Bank first introduced me to this issue in its 1993 report, where it graphed on the left side of the graph here a life expectancy at birth and income in U.S. dollars for various periods in the 20th century. And the basic idea here, as you'll see repeated over and over again, as you start to cut way down on the resources available to you, it really matters a lot what resources you have available to you. It doesn't matter so much once you get above that cusp. And wealthier nations, although they may expend a lot of resources and resources on a lot of good things, they don't increase life expectancy very much. Fortunately, not a lot of countries are down in that lower right-hand corner. And unfortunately, too, there are not a lot of countries way up where we need to be in the upper left corner. This is another version of the graph. It's interesting because instead of using income, it uses environmental cost, in this case, footprint. And if you're not familiar with ecological footprint, it's a measure of the level of renewable resources that a region uses translated into an equivalent area. So if everyone lived at a level of one planet, you know, on the planet, they'd have a one planet environmental footprint. And this goes all the way up to these countries, that if everyone in the world lived in the style we live in North America and some other places, it would be, we need five planets to do this. And meanwhile, they found one country that was working at less than one planet resources, but with very high life expectancy. This is a very similar graph. It's a happiness against footprint, and it's of the same shape. This is a human development index, which uses three factors, life expectancy, educational level, and income, against income. And I think a problem with the human development index is it counts income as favorable in regard for a country. My treatment counts in environmental cost, actually, not income, but counts environmentally caused entirely against the country's score on health. So I'm looking kind of for a very simple measure, which we could build on for keeping score in this regard. On the the health side of the measure hasn't interested me that much. I just use life expectancy at birth for this. I'm quite interested in the environmental measure because I'm quite concerned with climate change, and I think carbon dioxide release to the atmosphere is the key measure that we want. But I want to mention that there are other ways to look at this. This is a Swedish report that came out a year or so ago that tried to estimate, well, what are the really big environmental problems? And it's even hard to notice climate change on this chart because they're a lot more worried about the nitrogen phosphorus cycle and more worried about biodiversity, which, by the way, are also related to climate change. But anyway, the moral significance of carbon dioxide release is that basically it goes out into a commons that all nations are then affected by. Carbon dioxide will have very long-term major health, environmental, and social effects. It stimulates migrations and therefore newly shared regions and spaces. Carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, climate change, then drives environmental changes such as that may have other health effects such as water and agriculture. Climate change mitigation, that is reduction of carbon dioxide output, is a very key measure. It's a little complicated. We'll leave that out. Many people don't appreciate how serious this matter is. It depends on how much risk you want to take. Politically, we're shooting for 550 parts per million in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. It will probably be very hard to get an international agreement even to limit it there. 450 parts per million is another target which many people take seriously. 350 parts per million, which we've passed some time ago, is what many people think we have to go back to. But to get there, we have to really greatly decrease our carbon dioxide output. In this version, actually, we have to get to zero by 2050, and we need to do so by reducing our carbon dioxide use in the first world at 10% per year. So I messed with the math. This is the carbon dioxide versus life expectancy graph. It's the same one you saw before. Since it's carbon dioxide, it actually has some interesting effects. Notice as you get in the high area, you begin to actually drop in your success because in a high energy society, it's fairly dangerous. I also compared as to whether we took the environment more seriously or whether we took public health more seriously, and then generated a list of countries that scored well. That is, they had low carbon dioxide output and at the same time high public health. Once again, Cuba was high, as it was in that other graph. Costa Rica is high, and notice they're politically very different countries, but in the same region. Korea, Albania, Switzerland, Belize, Hong Kong, Uruguay, Sri Lanka, and so on showed up on this list. If you emphasize the environment, the list changes a bit, and you have different countries on the list. And if you emphasize health, you kind of get those European countries that score so well on health and environmental costs, like Switzerland and Sweden. If you kind of make a table of counting them equally, counting environment more, counting health more, you get a list that's really quite disparate. Only two countries show up on all three lists the way this math worked, and there's a lot of other ways to do it. A few countries, the ones in italics, showed up once, and there are a number that showed up no matter how you mess with the numbers. I did some comparative scales of indexing. My index here ranked at the top. Notice that it's very miscellaneous when you compare it to the Human Development Index, which means it's a different measure. I also did the ranking that WHO provided on healthcare systems, and as you see, it's also highly miscellaneous. I think what's interesting and important, and a number of people have studied this, is to study what low-cost, high-health countries have done. And I think that's a thing we need to learn in the first world. So the point of this talk is that we should be learning from the low-cost, high-health countries rather than trying to export our ideas around the world.
Dr. Jameson.
Oh, come on. Ah, Dr. Donahoe, yes.
One thing I noticed that was just interesting, I being half Australian myself, I saw that the U.S. required something like 5 planets and Australia 2, and yet on CO2 emissions, they were right next to each other.
Yeah.
Does that mean that Australia consumes a lot more goods, but just doesn't manufacture as much or produce as much?
I didn't correct for exports and imports. But they may also simply be substituting carbon dioxide. Fossil fuel cost may do a lot of the work that is done materially in other countries. It's a good and interesting question. I'd like to pursue it.
Anyone else? Well, you have another opportunity later.
Okay. All right.
Thank you very much. Toward the end of the session, we'll have time for additional questions.